the monologue.
Even though just, what, 2 weeks ago he said there was nothing really he could do, all of a sudden Governor Jay Inslee, now that he's getting prodded by the Democrats in Olympia, he's saying, okay, maybe there is something we can do with the Long-Term Health Care Act that goes into effect in January. A lot of you didn't do anything, and then you ended up getting somehow shocked that you were going to get hit with a payroll tax. Everyone who has a W-2 form or who gets a W-2 form will get hit with a payroll tax. A payroll tax that creates a really subpar system for long-term care. Now, long-term care is important, there's no doubt, and too few people have it. But the system that was put in place by Democrats, not by Republicans, but by Democrats, was awful. It was unfair. You had to opt out of paying the payroll, not opt in of getting into this system. And the only way to opt out was to go on the private market and get your own coverage. But the problem is, you only had a few months to opt out, and we talked about this on the air. And the people moving forward who maybe don't have jobs yet, you have no opt-out period. So if you're some 16-year-old kid and you end up getting your first summer job, and then you get out of college, then you get your first job, well, you guys have to pay into the system with no option of opting out to go into the private market, which would provide way, way, way better coverage. It is absolutely ludicrous. It's absolutely ludicrous. Now, they're not likely to make any changes to the poor coverage. And it creates lots of loopholes, like someone who lives in Idaho or Oregon but works in Washington State. They pay into the system. They can't ever get any of the benefits. You've got people who want to retire outside of Washington, maybe to Idaho. And you wouldn't be subject to any of the benefits at that point. You have to stay here in Washington. That's why I joined with show sponsor Carter Gray, PacificInsuranceGroup.com. He's my agent. He got me really good long-term care coverage that I can take outside of Washington if I were to leave. Not planning on it, but I could. So we'll end up seeing what happens. But the governor is saying, okay, well, now, you know, I'm working with these Democrats who wrote me a letter saying that they want some changes.
Well, I'm talking to them about other options to be able to accomplish that end. And I think those may be possible.
Okay, so what exactly does that mean? Because right now, let's say you make $50,000 a year. Well, you end up paying $300 a year when this tax kicks in, right? This is a tax on top of all the other taxes that you're paying. And this impacts everybody with W-2, remember. So even if you are low income and you're living paycheck to paycheck, you get hit by this. Everyone seems to acknowledge that there are problems. So now he's saying, well, maybe we won't just collect the money for several months. And in the interim, that's when the legislators can actually fix it.
Because we do not collect the tax directly from the employee, it's essentially withheld by the employer, and it's not due to the state till April. So by not seeing collections from the employers till April, it could give the legislature time to make these refinements.
You know, this is a perfect example of why, number one, a part-time legislature doesn't cut it, and number two, why when you've got partisans, ideologues, who rush through legislation and almost never works out. It almost never works out. They rush this through. They like the idea of it on the Democratic side. They had the votes to do it, so they just decided to go ahead and move forward. They didn't do any meaningful community outreach. They didn't do any meaningful outreach to industry leaders. They didn't allow Republicans to have a say in this. They just moved forward, put their heads down, moved forward, pushed it anyway. And it has so many loopholes that so many problems, anyone who spent even 10 minutes on it could have pointed it out. But when you're an ideologue, you're blinded by that belief, by that political belief. You've got blinders on and you don't see some of the downsides or unintended consequences, or don't realize the intended consequences are actually worse than you might imagine. And despite all of the yelling about this, they just decided to move forward anyway. Republicans were yelling about it. They didn't care. You've got now a initiative process moving forward, collecting signatures. I'm presuming that they're going to continue to do that so they can make the changes. Because are you comfortable putting this back in the side of the state legislature? They screwed it up the first time. Why wouldn't they screw it up a second time? I much more trust the process of voters getting a say than I do, again, putting this into the hands of the legislature.
The interview.
So just a few days ago and on Fox News earlier this week, I talked about a science teacher out in Bothell, Kevin McDonald, who decided to turn his science class into a monologue about the Kyle Rittenhouse case, saying that this was an example that cops effectively are racist, because if Kyle Rittenhouse were black, this would have ended in a much different way. He says that, of course, as plenty of black people who have been protesting with weapons haven't been even arrested at all. This, of course, was absurd and shows you the bias at schools here in Washington State, really across the country. Well, the student who actually took that video joins me now. I'm not going to give his name just out of privacy protection so he doesn't get in too much more trouble probably with the school. Welcome to the show.
Jason, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
What made you decide to take that cell phone out and start to film?
It was really the conversation started to take a turn. It started as a conversation actually about microaggressions, which is kind of part of their curriculum. They have these conversations every day. And when that conversation got underway, I wasn't in feeling the need to record. Nothing got crazy. But then when it turned into a rant, when I heard Kyle Rittenhouse's name and I heard him start sharing his opinion, I figured it was an appropriate time to probably start recording.
Now, this was supposed to be a class about magnets, right?
Yep, physics class. It's my first period of the day, and we were covering magnets and everything. Yeah, that's what we were supposed to be covering.
So then how did it transition into first the microaggressions conversation, but then the conversation about Rittenhouse?
So the conversation about microaggressions is actually in our curriculum at school. It's they have these words of the week they talk about. So two examples would be that microaggression, they have justice, privilege. Like, there are all these words that they talk about, and they spend anywhere from like five, and that day it was about 25 minutes talking about them. And when I made a point about microaggressions, then it turned into his political view on Kyle Rittenhouse to kind of be a counter statement to what I mentioned. He said that I made the point that race was being weaponized, and he said that's race used as a weapon.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so you committed a microaggression by talking about microaggressions. How often does this teacher do these kinds of things?
So these conversations are pretty much like every teacher has to talk about them by the school Thursdays and Fridays of every week. And it's usually, some teachers don't, but most teachers will have a pretty long, in-depth conversation about these, anywhere from like 5 to like 20 minutes.
How often does he let his personal views get involved?
Most teachers, I would say that teachers at Bothell, most do a pretty good job. This was the first time this year this teacher let his views get involved, and I was able to get a video. But last year, I had a math teacher at Bothell who had her views involved very frequently, almost every single class period. And during these conversations, she was constantly giving her viewpoints and really lecturing us on what she believed.
How'd that make you feel as someone who presumably is a little bit more conservative?
I mean, I was at Zoom in my house, and so I felt pretty comfortable with it. But I mean, it's weird to see that in schools. I think in math class we should focus on math, and I think in physics we should focus on physics.
Shocking.
I don't really think that these political conversations have a place in these classes.
Yeah. What a controversial position you just took. We should actually teach science in science class and math in math class.
Some people would disagree with that. It's funny.
It's weird. Have you suffered any consequences as a result of the filming?
I've suffered no consequences so far, although I'll mention the following day I went into the first period physics class and I was pulled out by my teacher and he asked me to power down my phone before I went back into class just so I didn't take any videos.
Okay, so then they know you're the one who did it.
Exactly.
Are you okay with that?
Yeah, I'm fine with it. I mean, I think I did what's right. I mean, I wanted to kind of expose what they're teaching in schools because, to be honest, the district hides it and they pretend that these conversations don't happen. I know that when you reached out to them, they didn't comment on the fact that if these conversations are like supposed to happen or if they're supposed to give their political opinions or if they're supposed to have these conversations in general. And they do, in fact. And I wanted to kind of expose what they're trying to hide.
Well, I'm glad you did. I know a lot of parents and students did get woke in the last year, different kind of woke, not the kind of woke that progressives like. But you all figured out what was going on and how it was going down. And I'm glad you felt empowered to start to videotape. And generally, I don't need teachers getting ratted on by students who are, you know, not doing anything wrong. But when they're doing something wrong, let's call them out.
Yeah.
I will happily put a spotlight on that. I'll give you the last word.
I would just say that it's really just about what's going on in school. I think they're trying to hide something, and I think that videos like these just kind of show what they're actually teaching versus what people what the school board will say they're teaching and what the curriculum suggests. This is what really goes on in classrooms. So this isn't the only teacher. There's several other teachers who take very similar approaches. And this is actually, I would say, a modest teacher in terms of some of the things teachers will say in classrooms. It gets a lot worse than this. This is kind of the beginning. And there are several teachers who go much farther than this.
Well, those teachers, you're on notice when you've got kids who are going to start recording the nonsense that you put in classrooms. I will happily amplify that video and audio. I will happily do my part. Thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate you sharing your story,
man.
Thank
you so much for having me. You have a great rest of your day.
You as well. You're listening to The Jason Rantz Show.
The Jason Rantz Show.
Always glad to see Seattle radio host Jason Rantz.
It's always a pleasure to watch you and a pleasure now to host you.
Jason, I just love your coverage of what's been going on in Seattle.
Jason, this is as bad as it gets in America.
Jason Rantz, great to see you. Thank you.
Long Form, presented by Northgate Rare Coins and Precious Metals.
Another strong conservative is entering the race for the 3rd congressional district, trying to take on Jamie Herrera Butler. From Battleground, of course. She is also a Republican, but has come under some significant criticism for being too wishy-washy, for being really a Republican in name only. Joining me on the line is the newest entrant into the race. You know her as a state representative, Vicky Kraft of Vancouver. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Jason. Great to be back with you and your listeners.
It's going to be fun. You're going up against now not just Jamie Herrera Butler, but also Heidi St. John, Joe Kent, two also strong conservatives who are running in this race. What made you decide to take the leap?
Great question. And I know there's a lot of people wondering that question. So I appreciate this chance to share with your listeners and those who will share this message. I have been considering taking this step for a little while, certainly before just this year. And for me, consideration and thought and prayer are very important. So I have been doing those things for a while, but as you well know, timing is really critical, and not just from a political standpoint, but for me personally. I need to make sure I'm hearing and moving in step as led, I will say. And so as I was considering and looking at taking this step now, certainly given the unfortunate decision by our incumbent Congresswoman earlier this year, but also taking a look at everything that's been happening certainly in our state, but obviously now nationally at a very rapid level, the process became very clear for me as far as taking the next step when the Redistricting Commission put out their final plan to the Washington State Supreme Court here recently. And in that final plan, I have redistricted out of my current district in the 17th. And that was really the final, I'll say, confirmation that it took, and I said, now is the time. I need to step forth and put my legislative experience to work for the Southwest Washington voters and citizens in Washington, D.C.
In other words, it was a sign. You're not ready to stop the work that you're doing on behalf of the community, but because of the redistricting, they kind of forced your hand.
They did. That was a nice short way of putting that. Yes. I mean, the bottom line is, and you know this, Jason, I think your listeners very well know, I have continually and consistently fought and stood up for the people and parents and, you know, name it, and worked to really limit government, rein it in, and make sure that our country and in my current role, our state can really function as it was designed to constitutionally. And certainly over the last 19 months, we've seen the exact opposite of that happening, seeing it upfront and personal in our state, but we are seeing it at a rapid, highly exponential rate at our national level, which is very concerning. And so that's why, in particular now, redistricting kind of clinched the timing, but it's time to take this experience, keep fighting for the people, but do it at a level that can impact and protect Southwest Washington and ideally a greater level impact the nation for good.
If you're just joining me, we're talking with State Representative Vicky Kraft, Republican from Vancouver. She has announced now that she is running in Washington's 3rd Congressional District. She's taking on Jamie Herrera Butler, but at the same time, Vicky, you're taking on Heidi St. John and Joe Kent, two Republicans who are running. And, you know, Joe Kent in particular is polling really, really well. What do you think is the difference maker that voters can look at to say, okay, I'm going to go with Vicky Kraft?
That is the most important question, I think, for every voter, candidly, at this point. And the biggest reason that I'm in this race and that I believe voters really need to take a hard look at is that I am a tested, tried, and true public servant. I have a proven track record with votes to stand behind it, that I am who I say I am. I have fought the good fight for the people, for parents' rights, for limited government consistently. And, you know, Jason, I actually shared really for the first time earlier this week with the Clark County Republicans down in our area. I recently was very honored to receive the Conservative Excellence Award from effectively, you know them as the American Conservative Union Foundation. They are the folks that host CPAC, the National CPAC Convention that everybody's familiar with. But I was very thankful to receive that Conservative Excellence Award. And as I looked at their scoring for 2020 in particular, I am the highest ranking conservative in score by them out of all the House of Representatives serving. So that's really the issue. I think, you know, in talking certainly over the past few years with voters in Southwest Washington, many, especially in the Republican Party, have been very dismayed, I'll say, by what they felt like, you know, who the incumbent was going into her current position as the Congressional District 3 representative. And then watching over the years as, you know, conservative is not the word most, I would say many Republicans equate now with the incumbent. And I am a tried and true public servant. You can look at my voting record, and people know that, you know, I have not and I will not cave into special interest nor political pressure. I haven't done it in Olympia, Washington at the state level, and I will not do it in Washington, D.C. at the national level. So people know what they're getting with me, and that is really important, especially now in our nation's history and at a time we are facing such a drastic plummet.
Well, let's talk a little bit. We only have about 2-3 minutes left. Let's talk about some of the issues. Number one, we've got a vote coming up to keep the government open this weekend. And there are some Republicans who are saying we should tie funding the stopgap measure to whether or not we're going to fund the ultimate, we'll see if it gets past the court, but the push to force this vaccine mandate or testing policy on private businesses. Should the two be tied?
I believe they should. I really do believe they should. And I know for some that might seem concerning because they think, oh, you know, services that people need from the government are going to be shut down. You know, it's temporary funding. I think you and I, and, you know, we've seen over the last few years that, you know, if you're shutting down the non-essential agencies, right? I mean, you can keep open essential agencies if needed. But this is really a key opportunity because there does, you know, negotiating, there has to be, you know, some consequences, right?
Sure.
That is part of negotiating. And this is probably one of the best opportunities we have in our nation to protect our freedoms and stop this push to infringe on individuals' rights.
Last question.
So,
we don't, just because we're running short on time, obviously we don't know exactly how the Supreme Court is going to decide on the Mississippi 15-week ban on abortion. There seems to be an indication that they will let it go through but not completely overturn Roe v. Wade. Should Roe v. Wade be overturned?
I absolutely believe it should. I believe we need to protect life at all stages of life, unborn, born, and seniors. So to me, absolutely. I really am hopeful by the opening discussions and deliberations, and I hope that we do see Roe versus Wade overturned.
There you go. We've been talking with State Representative Vicky Kraft. She's now running for Congress in the 3rd District for the seat. She's challenging Jamie Herrera Butler, of course, the Republican incumbent. Her website is vickykraft.com. It's going through the transitionary period right now to the campaign site, but if you want to bookmark it and make sure that you get all the updates when they come available, vickykraft.com, V-I-C-K-I-K-R-A-F-T.com. Vicky Kraft, thank you so much for stopping by. Really appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Jason. Great to talk to you.
Absolutely.
The Jason Rantz Show.
Springing our man in the Pacific Northwest, KTTH, Seattle talk radio host Jason Rantz. Great to have you with us to tell people a little bit more about this.
Jason Rantz is in focus now.
Jason Rantz, thank you for your reporting on that.
The Quick Hit.
I don't want to spend too much time on Stacey Abrams, which is why we're going to just make this a very quick hit. But it's a good example, yet again, of the gaslighting of the American people. Now, gaslighting is essentially telling us something is happening when the opposite of what you say is happening is truly happening. So when we talk about how Joe Biden is gaslighting this country on the southern border or on the supply chain crisis, he says, no, there's no supply chain crisis. There's no crisis at the border. That's gaslighting because we can literally see, oh, no, you don't know what you're talking about. Everyone's getting tested when they come into this country for COVID. Even the people at the border, well, some of them. So next question, it's all gaslighting. So Stacey Abrams, the governor of Georgia, still, I think, because she hasn't actually conceded, she just announced that she is running again. She's doing the exploratory committee. She's running again for Georgia governor. Now, she was on with Rachel Maddow last night, who pointed out, you know, she made some comment of like, hey, you know, you were pretty contentious about the result of the last one. Obviously, Stacey Abrams, for up until this point, still has said that the election was stolen, that she didn't lose the election, that she won. She's just not the governor. So this was someone who made that her main talking point after the election was clear that she had lost. But now she's saying she never challenged the results.
In 2018, I'd spent more than a year traveling the state, but I'd also spent 10 years, 11 years in the state legislature. And I'd been working on voting rights since I was 17.
Uh-huh.
And I'd watched, in fact, I'd battled with the then Secretary of State over his egregious and aggressive voter suppression activities.
Uh-huh.
And on the night, on the 16th of November, when I acknowledged that I would not become the governor, that he had won the election, I did not challenge the outcome of the election.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. Yes, you did. Yes, you did. Should I say that again? Yes, you did. If you don't concede, if you say the election was stolen from you, you are challenging it. She didn't legally challenge the result because she knew she would lose. She just chose not to ever concede. She refused to officially concede the night she gave what otherwise would be determined to be or called a concession speech. But since then, she has said that the election was stolen from her, that she actually won. She said that many, 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 many times. What she's doing here is lying to you. She is gaslighting. It's almost like she doesn't think we have access to the internet. It is remarkable that she gets a pass on this. She gets a pass. Trump doesn't. Trump doesn't get a pass. He says the election was stolen. He's wrong. He's right to call out certain states and how they conducted it. There was definitely changes, 100%. But the election was not stolen. Not from him, not from Stacey Abrams. The difference is Stacey Abrams gets a pass because the media, left-wing media, like her. It likes her. So this is absolute nonsense. Absolute nonsense. And it's going to continue. And my gosh, talk about just insufferable news coverage that we're going to have to suffer through. Just wait. Oh, my gosh. Just wait until that race actually heats up. I'm presuming she's going to still go up against Brian Kemp. I don't know if he's going to stay in the race. I'm pretty sure he said he was running for re-election. He's going to face a Republican challenger, several probably. Obviously, he's not going to get the endorsement of Donald Trump. But we'll see how that goes. I can tell you now, though, it's just going to be insufferable. And they're going to put all their weight, the media, around Stacey Abrams the same way they did it the first time around. The same way they did with Beto O'Rourke in Texas when he was running for senator. They're going to do the same thing now that he's running for governor. It's just a nightmare.
The last rant.
And then finally, I don't know, and I need some of you guys to weigh in on this. So let me know if I did the right thing. Not in helping a homeless man, which I did today. And I usually don't because... mostly because they ask me for money, and I don't have money on me. I don't carry cash on me ever. Never, ever, ever do I have cash on me, whether in this country or another. Never have it. I do everything on my card. But this guy outside of a 7-Eleven I walked by on my way to work asked me if I could buy him a small cup of coffee because he said he had a rough night. And I was initially shocked. I didn't respond just right after he said it. Took me a couple seconds, a couple beats, because again, normally my answer is no, because I don't have cash. And I was about to say, I don't have any cash. I'm sorry. But he asked me for a small cup of coffee. I said, yeah, okay. And so we went into the 7-Eleven together. I like their coffee. I feel like people give me a hard time for liking coffee from 7-Eleven, but it's actually pretty good. And so he's there, he grabs a small cup, to which I said, you can get the large cup. Go for it. Do you want a muffin? He said, I could use a wild blueberry. So I got him a wild blueberry. So he gets the coffee, and he's very slow. He's taking a very long time. I don't know what in the world he's doing. But as he's getting the coffee, I then turned to him, because I got to go to work. And I started to judge him. Because what I saw him do to that coffee alarmed me as someone who's a coffee snob. Not going to lie. This man put not just a whole bunch of creamer in it, and I mean like a cup's worth of creamer, but also a cup's worth of sugar. He put so much sugar. And yes, it's a way for someone to get calories when they're not getting any calories. But it can't taste good. And I wanted to be like, dude, at that point, why don't you just go to the refrigerator and get one of the pre-made coffee cups? The pre-made, you know, the frappuccinos in a bottle or whatever those things are, that's also filled with sugar. More sugar probably than what you're putting in this coffee. This isn't going to taste good, man. What are you doing? But I didn't say anything. But am I wrong for judging him? Silently in my head, I admit I did it. It had nothing to do with him being homeless. It had everything to do with having bad taste in coffee. That's all I got. So should I yell at myself? Let me know. Send me an email. Go to ktth.com or send me a tweet. Under Jason Rantz. Thank you so much for tuning in. Really do appreciate it. Hope you all have a great weekend.